Hey, good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on NOVEM Radio Network. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Glad you could make it. We'll be here tonight and tomorrow night, and then off Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We are working tonight and tomorrow night to kind of compensate for all the time I had off last week because of pneumonia. Anyway, thanks for being here. The phone number is 800-989-1480. File it away. Don't call yet because we have a couple of topics to cover before we get to the phone calls. Manor Monkey met with his favorite oil man today, Hamid Karzai, to discuss the first war of the 21st century. Remember that? Afghanistan? Remember that guy named Osama bin Laden? Huh? The decider went before the cameras and totally contradicted his oil boy on whether or not the Taliban had made a comeback in Afghanistan. We'll play that sound for you in just a couple of minutes. So you know what that means, True Seekers. Moron sounds on the program tonight, so brace yourself, okay? And yeah, I'm going to be talking about the absolute... I've got a sharp pain in the low, right here, about, I don't know, about fourth rib down, Kathy, in the middle of my back. And at first I thought it was from all the coughing I did last week, and then I realized, no, this is from what happened Saturday with the Blue Dog Democrats in Congress who gave George W. Bush unlimited power where it concerns warrantless wiretapping to do anything he damn well pleases. I don't know how to handle that. I really don't. So we'll talk about it coming up a little bit later in the program, and maybe you have an idea about what to do at this point. Anyway, we are struggling to get single-payer health care in this country. We may have it in my daughter's lifetime, my daughter who's 3 years old, not my daughter who's 40. We may have it in Molly's lifetime. In the meantime, a supermarket has stepped into the breach, Publix Supermarkets. I don't know if there's Publix markets in your neck of the woods, but here in the South, they are fairly prevalent. 7 antibiotics, among the most widely prescribed, will be available at no cost from Publix supermarkets for people with prescriptions. That's according to a press release that the company had today. 14-day supplies of these 7 antibiotics will be available at all 684 of Publix supermarkets' pharmacies inside the stores. In 5 southern states, Publix said there is no limit on the number of prescriptions that customers may fill for free. And the prescription antibiotics under the program include some that you're all familiar with, amoxicillin, cefalexin, ciprofloxacin, penicillin VK, ampicillin, erythromycin, and one I cannot pronounce. Other companies have begun discounted drug programs, including Walmart and Kmart, but Publix is the first large regional chain to offer certain drugs at no cost. Isn't that astonishing? Isn't that astonishing? These filthy pigs in the pharmaceutical industry and these whores in the Bush crime family who can't seem to get their act together to the extent of proposing legislation to finally bring about what is so absolutely necessary and will come. Eventually it will come, True Seekers. Eventually we will not have an administration that says stem cell research somehow pees on the cross. At some point we will have an administration that realizes that 41 million Americans uninsured with no health insurance is an abomination. Eventually we'll have an administration in power and a Congress in power that realizes that 19 million children with inadequate or non-existent health care, it's just not something you do in a civilized country with the assets of this sick pen of morons. That's just about what we've become. Wandering around inside here, bumping up against each other, going, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, the ruling class just sits above and looks down at us and laughs their asses off. Eventually, that's going to happen, or eventually this country is going to explode in a second revolution. You know it, and I know it. It's just a matter of time. I hope that there are some wiser heads involved in running this country over the next 7, 8, 10, 15 years who will bring about the changes so utterly needed. An end to war of all sorts unless this country is attacked. And nobody would ever attack us. Nobody would ever attack us. I'm talking about state-sponsored attack. You're going to have hundreds of thousands of people who want to blow up a piece of America for the next 10, 15, 20 generations, thanks to George W. Bush. But at some point, we have got to realize that war is not the answer. It just simply isn't. And that we have to take care of our people in this country, kids, middle-aged people, old people, young people, people with mental illnesses, physical illnesses, so-called handicaps. I don't care what it is. Eventually that's going to come, or this country is going to explode in a second revolution, and we will get it that way. So just hold on. This is what I keep telling myself every single day. Hold on. Hold on. They can't beat us. You know, they can pass these criminal legislations, like was passed on Saturday, saying that now George Bush, and you realize, of course, what the Democrat-controlled Congress did. They turned the authority to make a decision on who to wiretap over to two people, one of whom is Alberto Gonzalez. That's how screwed up this Democratic Party is. That's how vile and filthy and nasty and whorish and full of, no offense to sex workers, and full of nothing but slime balls the Democratic Party has become. What was it? 15 Democrats. 15 Democrats switched over and voted to give George W. Bush and Alberto Gonzalez and Dick Cheney unlimited power. Fourth Amendment is now effectively over, as is the Fifth, as is the First. This is astonishing. Eventually, this country is going to convulse into a second revolution. You know it as well as I do. You know as well as I do that it's going to happen. Unless there is some leadership provided. And at this point, I don't give a damn where it comes from. It can come from Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Greens, monkey eaters, tree climbers, chandelier crawlers. I don't give a damn. Eventually, there has got to be put in place in this country leadership that understands what's going on here. There are 300 million people, take away the top 1%, who couldn't care less. That leaves 290 million who are poised to explode. I don't know what the tipping point's going to be. I really, really don't. But the ruling class better understand that they need to step aside, take all the money that they have taken from us, take all the power they've taken from us, and take it someplace and go play with it and get out of the way, so that we can get back to the idea of governing ourselves. Because if they don't, we are going to kill them. It is that simple. I am not an idiot to the point that I don't understand that you cannot keep doing this to a population of 300 million and expect that you're going to continue to get away with it. It's not going to happen. And this latest outrage that occurred Saturday is just one more nail in their coffin, not ours. So just hold on. And we'll get to that topic later. Damn. See, I got all sidetracked. I've got two emails here I want to share with you. And then we will... Oh, and this. Who is this Tom Tancredo? Who unlocked his pen and let him out? This representative from Colorado, who once again says it would serve as a good deterrent if we bombed Mecca and Medina. Go bomb Muslim holy sites. Who is this dribbling, foul-breathed devil named Tom Tancredo, who apparently just wants murder and mayhem on a scale that even his peanut brain obviously can't understand? And Pat Buchanan's psychotic sister, who is a Tancredo advisor, says this shows that we mean business. What the... I mean, what is wrong with these people? These are people that need to be isolated from normal human beings. Tancredo, Buchanan, Gonzalez, they need to be penned off somewhere. We'll be right back.
truth, justice, and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Sylvia in Redford, Michigan, writes in that there's a chain of supermarkets in Michigan that has been doing the same thing as public stores are getting ready to do here in the South. She writes several antibiotics are on the list. My husband had surgery done earlier this year, and we were able to get for free. I went in with the prescription, not knowing it was on the list, and we're pleased it was. Majors is in Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, and Ohio. Yeah, I'm familiar with that chain, too. Well, that's good to know. And Judy in Berkeley writes, regarding revolution subject, she says, I don't think so. I wish I had your confidence in the American people eventually revolting. There seems to be no bottom to what we'll take. I don't see many people in a state of constant outrage and danger of boiling over, and I live in Berkeley. I hope you're right. I just don't think you are. No, I understand what you're saying, but I don't think the American public will continue. I think the anger might be below the surface. It's frustration right now. A lot of people are too busy to let the anger boil out. They're too afraid to. If the anger comes boiling out, their friends will start looking at them kind of askance, or their employers will get a little weird with them, or maybe the church or the synagogue or wherever they go for their religious services. You know, the people you hang out with determine kind of, they're kind of a damper. I know it's difficult, or it was difficult, not anymore. It used to be difficult for me to really express what whatever rage I might be feeling in front of my friends. Not anymore. They just don't bring it up now. The few friends I have left, they just say, Jesus Christ, don't talk about any of that stuff in front of Malloy. He's liable to go off. But I think it's there. I really do think it's there. When you have 41 million Americans with no health insurance, you have the standard of living starting to go down. I realize nobody seems to recognize it anymore. God, if you watch television or look at ads in magazines and newspapers, you'd think that we were just enjoying some, I don't know, just free fall of wealth and riches and sucking up material goods and so on and so forth. And yet when you go a little bit deeper and find out the housing market is imploding, stock market is being jerked around every day by the profit takers, the profit makers. You know, it's up 300 points today, down 500 next week, up 300 the week after, down 500. What is that? Well, you know, what does that indicate to you? And this endless war and the death and the destruction and the rotting infrastructure. No, I think eventually people will realize what the Republicans have done and what the Democrats are enabling them to do. This damn Democratic Party, I got to be careful tonight because I'm liable to use language, kind of language you're not supposed to use in over-the-air broadcasting. This is from Dan, who's a founders, NOVAM founding member from one of the suburbs, Minneapolis. Dan wrote, Mike, your call from Mark on your show last Friday got me thinking about a thought I've had about Republicans, Democrats, and taxes. Republicans have got taxes figured out. They borrow for a war, defund and privatize our infrastructure, including transportation, education, communication, and safety, basically running the country into the ground. By the time the American public gets mad enough to beat the voting machines and vote the Democrats into power, the new leadership almost has no choice but to raise taxes to help pay for and recover from all of the damage that has been wrought by the former Republican criminals. Then the rich-talking heads can complain that they and their affluent followers may need to get the slightly smaller summer home or have to save up for a few more days to get the shiny new SUV due to the new taxes. By the time enough repairs have been done and peace and prosperity has been returned at some level to our country, those pundits' talking points will start to seep into enough poorly educated heads, telling them that they could have more of their hard-earned money by just voting Republican and forgetting what those few extra dollars have brought them. And so the cycle begins again. Regress, progress, regress, progress. All the while, the corporations get richer and more powerful, and political alliance for some is more of a financial decision than a moral or ethical one. Dan in Minnetonka. Yeah, I'm getting tired of getting jerked around, too. See, that's what I mean. I mean, people like Dan, I understand that you know, what Judy's talking about, Judy in Berkeley, that, you know, people are not pissed off enough yet. But it's there. It's there. It really is there. And it's been there for some time. It really has. It's been there. You know, as we have entered this new Gilded Age, just like the one that existed in the 20s, before the stock market crash in 1929, as we've entered this new Gilded Age, the 1% has ripped off and stolen so much from the rest of us, from the working class, the so-called middle class, the working poor, and people that used to consider themselves upper middle class. So much has been stolen, conned, taken away. You know, look at Enron. Look at the savings and loan deals back in the late 80s. All of this revenue that has been stolen from the vast majority of the American public, you can get away with that part of the time, but eventually that monster you create wakes up, and then it devours you if you are part of that 1%. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The chance won't come again, and don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing.
No subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
Through a hole in the air, from those nads to Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fire.
It's about 25 before the hour. DB wants me to correct the superstore, the chain of superstores in the Midwest. I pronounce it Majors. It's Meijer. Meijer. Thanks, DB. This email from AJ in Seattle. Mike, after the FISA fiasco this weekend, in my anger, I read blog after blog trying to make sense of why the Democrats supported this bill. Somewhere on the Common Dreams website, a commentator recommended an article by Chris Floyd at Empire Burlesque. I got my answer. It basically details how the Democrats and Republicans are all in this together. The military-industrial complex in power controls both parties and will not be greatly changed in my lifetime. The Democratic elite are spawned by the same corrupt system that produces the Republican leadership. They serve essentially the same interests. Except for minor differences that, because of economies of scale, can actually make a difference sometimes. They're both working for the same side. Am I sad? Yes. It feels like all that the Founding Fathers stood for is fading into myth. Yet strangely, I feel like a great load has been lifted because the truth has become clearer. Mainstream Democrats and the so-called Democratic blogs are, as the article says, blinded by their belief that Democrats are good, and if we just work hard enough, good will prevail. They can't see the forest for the trees. Even most of progressive radio is sadly of this belief. I know you profess some faith in the party, Mike, but I now feel it has rotted from within and needs to be thrown in the garbage. In my career as a fundraiser for a relief agency, I know that I can plod along trying to help a few third world citizens at a time, and that will have to be okay for now. My beloved country, however, is lost in a mire of lies and greed. We know how to deal with scarcity, but not with abundance. The wealthy just have to have more and more, and don't care that more and more have to die so they can keep their wealth. And there's not a whole lot we can do about it. AJ in Seattle. I don't need to comment on every email that comes in here. That's kind of stupid. Me commenting on every email. All right, last email, but I want to share this with you because, you know, I got a couple of good ones here. This is from Scott, in writing from Sweden. And he writes, Mike, your final caller of the week. This is the second email regarding that final caller, Tony. Dear Mike, your final caller of the week, Tony, reported that his aneurysm at age 50 had ruined him financially, forced him to sell off all his assets, and he's now forced to live with his mother, and he even had a private health care policy. Worse, his state will only cover him as long as he has no income. Two other callers have lost their sight without the Lions Club, that is, without the charity of a business organization. They would now be blind. And we're supposed to feel warm and fuzzy about the Lions Club? Maybe, but only on the condition of knowing first that the Lions had done all they could as an organization and individuals to get the entire citizenry good health insurance, and care only having been stymied in that endeavor, resorting to administering charitable assistance. However, I suspect that the vast majority of Lions Club members have long opposed national single-payer health care and probably still do. The U.S. infuriates me. European societies learned long ago that good health care requires early intervention, when a gram of intervention is worth a kilogram of remedial intervention. And even then, when major interventions are required, these other Western societies know that getting the individual restored as much as possible is not merely the decent thing to do, but it promotes the dignity of both the patient and caregiver, but a well-treated patient quickly returns to being a productive citizen again. You also had a flying monkey call in Friday night claiming that single-payer health insurance meant taxes had to rise. What hogwash. Here in Sweden, tax rates have been fairly stable for decades, and the quality of health care steadily improves because health care competes with schools, public transport, pensions, defense, roads, etc. The health care providers have a constant incentive to innovate, and our medical research is thus second to none. Doctors here are not millionaires, but solidly middle class. The overhead for administering the health care system is only a couple of percent. The rest goes for paying for the actual care. Drugs are purchased in bulk, and and those who need many drugs have their copays lowered. Pharmacists can substitute generics for brand name after they ask you if it's okay to do so. In short, our health care here is top rate, and stories like Tony's are virtually unheard of. If Tony had been here, he would have had the care he needed, still have his assets, and the employment service would have worked with the rehabilitation services to find some sort of new career for him consistent with both his physical condition and his personal interests. That Tony, at mid-age, and through no fault of his own, is essentially reduced to living out his life, broke and idle, just fills me with rage at the American capitalist system. Through no cleverness or worthiness on my part, I happened to move from the U.S. to Sweden and discovered that other societies are so much more democratic and so much more humane. Europeans have organized and obtained all this and more for themselves about the same time as FDR wanted to promote this in the U.S. Somehow, the Americans have let the right take back all these gains, and they, the greedy, have no bottom to their appetite. Reagan and the Rush Limbaugh ditto heads have bankrupted the country economically and morally. I fully understand your impatience with each flying monkey that calls in. Keep giving them hell, Mike, but keep reminding our countrymen and women that others have organized and held on to so much more. It's not only possible, but an everyday reality elsewhere. To get it for America, they have to fight for it. There are no shortcuts. The rich bastards give nothing of value away. Scott in Stenhamra, Sweden. It's just astonishing sometimes, isn't it, if you stop and allow yourself to think about it, that health care is something you buy in this country like you buy new shoes or a new outfit or a bracelet. Jesus, God. The Tom Tancredo thing, where do these vermin come from? You people in Colorado, how do you send a piece of human excrement like Tom Tancredo to the U.S. House? I don't get this. It says Tom Tancredo's campaign stood by his assertion that bombing holy Muslim sites would serve as a good deterrent to prevent Islamic fundamentalists from attacking the United States, his spokeswoman said Friday. Oh, in other words, a preemptive strike, huh? Babe Buchanan, psychopath and sister of the other psychopath, Pat Buchanan, a senior Tancredo advisor, said, quote, "This shows that we mean business. There's no more effective deterrent than that. But he is open-minded and willing to embrace other options. This is just a means to deter them from attacking us," end quote. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's like the Japanese. To deter us from attacking them, they attacked Pearl Harbor. That really worked, didn't it? On Tuesday, Tancredo warned a group of Iowans, last Tuesday, that another terrorist attack would, quote, cause a worldwide economic collapse, end quote. He went on to say, if it's up to me, we're going to explain that an attack on this homeland of that nature would be followed by an attack on the holy sites of Mecca and Medina. That is the only thing I can think of that might deter somebody from doing what they would otherwise do. If I'm wrong, fine, tell me, and I would be happy to do something else, but you had better find a deterrent or you will find an attack, end quote. A deputy spokesman for the State Department told CNN that Tancredo's comments were, quote, reprehensible and, quote, absolutely crazy. Tancredo was widely criticized in 2005 for making a similar suggestion. Where do these sick pigs come from? The only way I would go along with that, Tom, Representative Tom, is don't stop with Medina and Mecca. Go on and get Jerusalem and then go get Amritsar. Get all the holy cities. Get Rome, or at least the Vatican. Let's knock them all out at once. Let's get rid of all this religious garbage that is so detrimental to the human race. Maybe I could agree with you on that level, Tom, but not just the Muslims. Let's destroy the home base, the home nest of every single vile religion on the planet, and maybe things will calm down a little bit, huh? This is the 6th of August. What does that mean? What anniversary is it? Huh? See some hands? Okay, I see a bunch of hands, but they're mostly from people over the age of 55. All right, what's August 9th? Okay. Our good friend Reg wrote this a couple of years ago. The bombs of August. When the bombs were dropped, I was very happy. The war would be over now, they said, and I was very happy. The boys would be coming home very soon, they said, and I was very happy. We showed them, they said, and I was very happy. They told us that the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki had been destroyed, and I was very happy. But in August of 1945, I was only 10, and I was very, very happy. The crew of the B-29 was so young and heroic, and in the photo they looked very happy. For some reason, I clearly remember the name of the pilot, Paul Tibbetts. Of course I remember the name of the plane, the Enola Gay, and, oh yes, I remember the name of the bomb. It was called Little Boy. That made me smile. I was so proud to be an American that day because we had done something so remarkable. They said we were the first. We were Americans. We were powerful. But they didn't say that Little Boy had killed 66,000 people with his huge fireball that fateful day in August. They didn't say that Hiroshima was not a military target, but a city filled with women and children and animals who had no idea they were about to die so horribly. When you're 10, they don't always tell you everything. I don't think anyone made a big fuss over the second plane or its crew. Are they even in the Smithsonian? Second best doesn't count, I suppose. But I remember wondering why they had done it again. Wouldn't the war be over anyway, like they said? Weren't the boys coming home very soon? Hadn't they already showed them how strong we were at Hiroshima? So they told me that the second bomb was called Fat Man, and that made me smile. So I was even prouder to be an American that second day. They said this would be the end for sure, and after all, these people were the enemy, and you kill the enemy when you can. But they didn't tell me that Fat Boy had killed 39,000 human beings with another fireball on another day in August. They didn't tell me that Nagasaki was not a military target, but a city filled with, well, you know. They didn't even tell me that there were horses trapped in the flames of Nagasaki, because I loved horses, and that would have made me sad. But when you're 10, they don't tell you everything. Today I'm no longer 10, and I'm no longer happy when bombs fall. And the names Fat Man and Little Boy no longer make me smile, because now I know the devastation and horror of burned bodies and twisted metal that result from the mushroom clouds. And I'm ashamed that on this day Americans don't stop to remember what was done. And I'm horrified that my government has just killed the thousands of defenseless men and women and children and animals who are not the enemy, and that the silence of America is deafening. Today I'm so very sad that many young people don't even know about the Enola Gay and the mission of its crew, and I'm so terribly ashamed that the war we have just waged has been so devoid of the reality of death and pain. They haven't told us about the thousands of civilians we've killed. They haven't shown us the devastation we've caused. They withhold the true numbers of our own military who die each day. They never mention the hundreds who've been terribly wounded. They speak to us as if we were all 10. George W. Bush is not 10. He has announced to the world that he, as the leader of this great nation, has the right to use nuclear weapons once again. This time, he says, he has the right to char men and women and children and animals if he suspects their leaders of being a threat to us. He's not 10. He really isn't. Then why is he so happy? And please, tell me, is he still smiling? And settle in the plane. I know the
miles behind them, a riddle full of holes. Not to be trusted with their hands at the controls. Their eyesight is twisted by the glory of their careers. The huge parade of flattery is music to their ears. To listen to them talk about how it hasn't happened yet, like then. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Russian rule then. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Russian rule then. Hiroshima.
Our nuclear arsenal as a deterrent. I'm interested in having an arsenal at my disposal.
It's about 7 before the hour. As far as bombing Medina and Mecca, Iran, in Briarwood, New York, writes, should England have bombed the Vatican? Years of bombings by the Irish Republican Army, and yet the Prime Minister of England never threatened to bomb the Vatican, the Vatican City. No wonder that mad, deathly conflict lasted so long. How come nobody was as smart as Tancredo back then? Yeah, oh, God. Today is also the anniversary of the Presidential's Daily Brief from 6 August 2001. Remember that? It was headlined, Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the United States. Huh? And when Condoleezza Rice was questioned by the commission investigating the September 11th attacks, she insisted that that brief did not amount to a real warning. Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the United States. It wasn't a real warning, according to the shoe lady. And Bush, a couple of years ago when he was asked about it, said the Presidential Daily Brief said nothing about an attack on America. It talked about intentions, about somebody who hated America. Well, we knew that. The question was, who is going to attack us? When and where and with what? And the New York Times had a summary. It began this way. In a single 17-sentence document, the intelligence briefing delivered to Bush in August 2001 spells out the who, hints at the what, and points toward the where of the terrorist attacks on New York and Washington that followed 36 days later. And Bush still hops around talking about how his obligation is to protect the American people. I have to be careful because I get so furious every time I see this rat bastard on television. You know, there are 3,000 people were killed in New York and Washington, D.C., and in a field in Pennsylvania because of what George Bush did and didn't do. George Bush was too stupid to follow up on the brief while Dick Cheney was pushing the buttons to murder 3,000 people in order to get what the PNAC crowd and Dick Cheney and then eventually George Bush really wanted. And that's what we have now. Endless war that would dissolve the Constitution of the United States and turn this country into what these right-wing bastards have always wanted. A corporatist state or a fascist state, take your pick. I don't care what you call it. Man. We have a break coming up here in just a second. Tomorrow, there's another anniversary coming up tomorrow, August 7th, 1964. That was the day that Congress passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution that cleared the path to escalate the war in Vietnam that resulted in 3 million dead Indochinese and almost 60,000 dead Americans and a couple hundred thousand wounded Americans. Passage of that measure came after the Johnson administration falsely claimed that U.S. vessels in the Tonkin Gulf off the coast of Vietnam had been subject to unprovoked attacks from North Vietnamese PT boats on August 2nd and August 4th. Oh, my God. August is not a good month, is it? Huh? For that sort of thing. All right, we're going to take a break here. We will be back after the break at the top of the hour. Stick around. We're going to take your phone calls tonight. But coming back, we have a couple of sound bites from Bush meeting with the former Unocal oil company lobbyist, Hamid Karzai, who is now the president, of Afghanistan. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. There is a documentary coming up on HBO in about 25 minutes. So, yeah, just record it. I don't want to lose you as a listener, but it's White Light, Black Rain about the attack on Hiroshima. And according to something I have here, the producer of this documentary in Salon.com he mentions in Salon.com that he tried to tone it down at first, but the people at HBO pushed him to show all the horrific footage. So we are recording it, Kathy and I, to watch after the program tonight. White Light, Black Rain starts in, here in the East, starts in about at 10:30 Eastern Time. I don't know how that translates to the West Coast or the middle of the country, but there you have it. Last email, and then I want you to hear Bush and with Karzai. This is from Joanne, who writes, "You just said something that caught my ear, what friends I have left." The last hour I was mentioning that, how difficult it is to have a conversation anymore. And she writes, "I too have pretty much lost some friends. Must not have been all that close. And in-laws. It seems that the American public has gone blank." She writes, "I live in Mill Valley, about 5 minutes north of San Francisco, the most liberal, rich county in America. I'm one of the few people in this town who attends protests, who calls their congress members, who has their hair on fire, who emails articles all over the country to try to keep people aware of the amazing assault on democracy and our Constitution. I belong to Code Pink. I'm considered a radical. Not so. I'm a regular person. I'm a stylist. I do makeup, wardrobe, and props for films. I work with corporate clients, mostly. I belong to a union. I tried to get union members to march in a protest, got nowhere. Thank me for doing what I do, but no thanks. Can't go. Too busy. Everyone is so involved in their work, party, shopping, life as usual. I think that is crazed. It is nuts that so many people not get involved and still consider most of us who are involved as well obsessed with the news or events of the world. They say they are worried and vote progressive, but my husband and I are both professionals and parents and educated and not radical at all, just aware. Thanks for playing Leonard Cohen." Joanne. Yeah. And she mentions being in that business, she says Bush still has the bug in his ear where it concerns these press briefings. Let's do some of Bush. This is his meeting with Harmid Karzai, former Unocal oil lobbyist, who somehow wound up going from that to being the president of Afghanistan. Amazing. So let's pause for a moment and not forget that first war, Afghanistan. Huh? In light of the disaster in Iraq, we shouldn't forget that other war and our troops that are being used and abused in that country. And by the way, where is Osama? Oh, that's right. He's in Pakistan. Never mind. This is from Bush's opening remarks. Once again, we're treated to more unintended irony from this unelected idiot.
There's still a fight going on. But I'm proud to report to the American people that the Afghan army is in the fight.
Oh.
The government's in the fight. And the army's in the fight. I remember talking a lot about how the Taliban prevented young girls from going to school in Afghanistan. American citizens recoil with horror to think about a government that would deny a young child the opportunity to have the basics necessary to succeed in life.
Like here?
Today there are nearly 5 million students going to school in Afghanistan, a third of whom are girls. Still work to be done, don't get me wrong. Mr. President, I appreciate your commitment to not only dealing with the poppy growers and the poppy crop, but also dealing with corruption.
Oh, Jesus.
It's very important that our society has emerged in such a way that the people have confidence in the capacity of government to conduct the affairs, conduct their affairs in a way that's above board and honest and transparent.
And above board and honest and transparent? This mentally crippled bastard is saying something like that in a country, ours, where things are never above board, always dishonest, and so opaque you can see nothing. Oh, my God. The poppy crop? Please, has no one told Bush what the rest of the world knows? That not only is Afghanistan the number one producer of opium, and therefore heroin, but that they have a bumper crop this year. And the Taliban, who tried to eradicate, I'm not defending the Taliban, tried to eradicate the poppy crop, is now working in a concert with the poppy growers because they know something that the Bush crime family figured out a long time ago. Drugs equal money. Tons of it. So the Taliban has been pushed back, I guess. All right, let's move on. After all the happy horse crap, howdy-do's, and inane chat about cheery children wearing white shoes and flying kites through the beautiful opium fields, Mensa Man took a couple of questions from the castrated press. Too bad all he could do is ramble on endlessly about freedom. But there was an Afghan reporter there who asked, President Bush, both you and Mr. President Karzai said the Taliban did not pose any threat to the Afghan people. So, who do you think is threatening the security in Afghanistan with kidnappings and beatings and the taking of government officials if it's not Taliban?
One thing is for certain. We know the vision, their vision of how to govern.
Oh, God.
They've been in power. I mean, they've had the opportunity to show the world how they think and what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's instructive for people to speak to, you know, a mother of a young girl about what life was like under the Taliban. These are brutal, cold-blooded killers.
Yes.
That's what they are.
Yes, he says.
And the fundamental question facing those of us who believe in freedom is whether or not we confront them and whether or not it's worth it, the effort, to spread an alternative to their hateful vision. And we've come to the conclusion it is. And that's why President Karzai stands right here at Camp David discussing common concerns, common opportunities about how to defeat a vision of darkness. That's what they are. They just don't believe in freedom.
So we're in Afghanistan to defeat a vision of darkness? To defeat a religious order of psychopaths almost as bad as the Southern Baptists? That's why we're there? That sounds like a job for Superman. I thought we were supposed to go to Afghanistan to find the murderous bastard whom The Bush crime family insists orchestrated the attacks on this guy. You remember George, the PDB from today, all those years ago, 6 years ago, that said Osama bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. So we're not there for that. We're there to defeat a vision of darkness. But the question was, if it's not, you know, the question that the reporter said, if it's not Taliban, who is responsible for, how did he so eloquently state it, the darkness? Is the Taliban still a threat? If it is, why? We've had 5 years to get them out of Afghanistan. What's taking so long? Well, the answer is very simple. You don't get the Taliban out of Afghanistan any more than you get the Saudis out of Saudi Arabia or the Brits out of England. You don't. I mean, you can't do that. What the hell? Religious orders of these nutballs have been in existence for what? Since the British tried to take them on in the 18th century, or was it the 17th? What difference does it make? It's insane. So that's why we're in Afghanistan. We're trying to defeat a vision of darkness. A vision. That's what we're trying to defeat. By God, that's what we're trying to defeat. Out of Chucklenuts' own mouth, we're there to defeat a vision of darkness. This is madness, Truth Seeker.
Before they can get us back, I'm not even gonna bother to argue over that. 'Cause it's clearly just a bunch of BS to distract us from the facts. It's about oil.
It's about oil.
It's about greed.
It's about greed.
It's about rich white men getting richer. It's about fear.
It's about fear.
And control.
And control.
Of those barrels of black gold.
Texas tea.
Yeah, step up, folks, to another war when we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Hello, it's about oil.
Boom, boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk. And I love
too much poppy cultivation in Afghanistan. Got to work together to eradicate poppy. The country is quite famous for growing pomegranates.
Yes.
Or honeydew melons.
Out off my feet.
21 past the hour, yeah. Pomegranates or honeydew melons. Yeah, forget the poppies, yeah. There was a book that came out a couple of years ago. Some of you will remember the book or remember our talking about it. It's called Forbidden Truth. It was written by a French journalist and a member of the French intelligence agency, and it was about the Taliban's trip. Ruling council, three or four of the members that came to Houston, Texas, back in 2001, I think it was 2000, where the offer was made to the Taliban by this consortium of oil folks, including the usual gang that now run this country. And the deal was very simple. Allow a consortium of U.S.-based oil companies to build a pipeline across Afghanistan to get all that nice oil and natural gas out of the Caspian Sea area, out of the stands, across Afghanistan to Pakistan and then to the Indian Ocean, where it would be loaded on tankers. And the Taliban was told at the time, I'm paraphrasing here, but they were told if you go along with this, we'll pave your streets in gold. If you don't go along with it, we'll bomb you into oblivion. And the Taliban leadership thought about it for a while and then said, no, hell no. And hence the invasion, ostensibly to find, Osama bin Laden. We are so stupid, aren't we, Truth Seekers? We are so, so stupid. But anyway, as far as Hamid Karzai, being a he was a lobbyist for UNICAL. our ambassador now to the United Nations, our former ambassador to Afghanistan, I'm sorry, to Iraq, but what's his name? Khalilzad, Zalmay Khalilzad. He's another one. He also was a paid advisor to Unocal oil company that was trying to get the Taliban to approve this construction of that $2 billion gas and oil pipeline across Afghanistan. So while Khalilzad worked at the Cambridge Energy Association, Hamid Karzai was working for doing risk analysis for Unocal. And Condoleezza Rice was on Chevron's board of directors. Richard Armitage, who was the deputy secretary of state, I don't know where Armitage has disappeared to, but he was a paid advisor to Unocal. Do you understand all this? Huh? Aren't you tired? Aren't you tired of being mocked and belittled by the Bush administration? We are told that we're there to in Afghanistan to fight against a vision of darkness, which is such crap. We are there to guarantee the sanctity and security of this pipeline. We are in Iraq for the same reason, except, see, Afghanistan, as far as anyone knows, doesn't have any oil, but we need to go across Afghanistan into Pakistan in order to get to the Indian Ocean, because Afghanistan does not have a seacoast. So, and we got to get the oil and the gas out of Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan and Gagestan and Nutsistan and Crazystan and all. Oh my God! And they just keep murdering our troops, murdering Afghans, murdering Iraqis, just murdering everybody. Just murder, pure murder, bloody murder. Murder. Red rum, red rum! That's all it is. This is astonishing, isn't it? Isn't it astonishing? Don't you think it's astonishing? So what happens today? Or Friday, Saturday, the Democratic-led Senate gives Bush all the power he wants to tap anybody's phone that he wants to tap. Jesus God. We got time to do this last one? No? Okay. We got one more about from Karzai and Bush today. I just don't understand. Why we don't get it? I mean, I get it. You get it. About why we're in Iraq and Afghanistan. It has not a damn thing to do with the engineered attack on this country that killed 3,000 people. It has nothing, 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 nothing to do with that at all. Not even a tiny bit. That attack came from Saudi Arabia. If it happened at all, the way the Bush crime family says it did. Why? I don't understand. I have theories, but I don't understand why the American public, why we don't get it, why Nancy Pelosi doesn't get it, and Harry Reid doesn't get it, and the Republic. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just to get another boat, I'll buy the beer.
Chug-a-luck, 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 chug-a-luck.
Hush, my darling, the red line's forming that we're gonna fly to Mars. Hush now, Mama, forget Osama, Kabul and Kandahar.
In the what's called the PDB, there was a warning about bin Laden's desires on America. Frankly, I didn't think that was anything new.
Brian's future, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, last one for tonight from Chuckle Nuts from Freedom Monkey. This time leaping around a question from a reporter about Iran's helpful role in Afghanistan. Because they were. Iran doesn't want anything to do with the Taliban. They're too crazy even for the Iranian leaders. But it just keeps getting worse and worse for the chimp. Once again, we're treated to more unintended irony from this unelected idiot. The reporter says, Mr. Bush, President Karzai said yesterday that he believed Iran was playing a helpful role in Afghanistan. Let me repeat that. President Karzai said yesterday that he believed Iran was playing a helpful role in Afghanistan. Was he able to convince you in your meetings that that's the case? Or do you still have concerns about Iran's role? And were you able to pressure President Karzai about your effort to reduce civilian casualties in Afghanistan? Now, listen, because Bush just confirms that the Taliban is very much a problem in Afghanistan. Makes you wonder what we've been doing there all these years, building a pipeline, maybe?
Let me comment on the civilian casualties, if I might. First, I fully understand the angst, the agony, and the sorrow that Afghan citizens feel when an innocent life is lost.
No, you don't!
I know that must cause grief in villages and heartbreak in homes.
Oh, Jesus.
Secondly, I can assure the Afghan people, like I assured the president, that we do everything we can to protect the innocent.
Oh.
That our military operations are mindful that innocent life might be exposed to danger, and we adjust accordingly.
Oh, God.
Thirdly, it is the Taliban who surround themselves with innocent life as human shields.
Oh.
The Taliban are the cold-blooded killers. The Taliban are the murderers. Secondly, it's up to Iran to prove to the world that they're a stabilizing force as opposed to a destabilizing force. After all, this is a government that has proclaimed this desire to build a nuclear weapon.
Like India! Oh, my God! Didn't you just go to India a few months ago and give them the... Oh, never mind. Oh, I can't stand this! Oh, my God! If Iran gets one, then I'll bet you Israel would want one. Oops. He fully understands the agony when an innocent life is lost. You unconscionable bastard, no you don't. Let's see one of your children murdered by a bomb falling from someone who's invaded your country. Would you, maybe that, no, you're George Bush, even that wouldn't register. We do everything we can to protect the innocent? Really? What does that mean? We try real hard not to rape and torture innocent civilians or kill their families or firebomb their villages or drop white phosphorus on them? Is that what that means? When he says the Taliban are murderers, the Taliban are cold-blooded, okay, I guess the answer to the last reporter's question, one before this, is yes, the Taliban are still very much a dangerous force in Afghanistan, despite the claims to the contrary. You just totally counterpunched your old buddy Karzai there, Raisin Brain, because Karzai said things are... Oh, God, why bother? Now, how long will it take? How long are we going to be in Afghanistan? Well, you know we're going to be there forever. And Iraq, but the Brits, British troops, this is in Sunday's Observer of the UK, British troops could remain in Afghanistan for more than the 38 years it took them to pull out of Northern Ireland. That's the bleak assessment by army commanders on the ground in Helmand province. In an interview with the Observer at headquarters in the provincial capital, Brigadier John Lorimer, commander of UK forces in Helmand, said, quote, if you look at the insurgency, then it could take maybe 10 years. Counter-narcotics, 30 years. If you're looking at governance and so on, it takes a little longer. If you look at other counterinsurgency operations over the last 100 years, then it has taken time, end quote. So, this brigadier's scenario is the starkest assessment yet from a senior officer tasked with defeating the Taliban, tackling the heroin trade, and rebuilding that country. Last week, troops pulled out of Northern Ireland after 38 years, the longest operation in UK military history. Afghanistan commanders fear may take longer. Brigadier Lorimer said he could visualize UK forces staying in Helmand after the Taliban and a growing counterinsurgency was defeated. His comments came as British infantry, often fighting for hours of temperatures up to 50 degrees Celsius, that's 122 degrees Fahrenheit, Truth Seeker, pushed north against well-defended Taliban positions. Scores of soldiers, British soldiers, have succumbed to heat stroke, while hundreds have battled on despite debilitating illness. Almost 50 out of 160 forward troops reported severe sickness and diarrhea in the forward base at San Jin last month. A number of troops have lost limbs during firefights in the upper Garish Valley, south of Sangin. The 1st Battalion of the Royal Anglians, with 650 soldiers in Afghanistan, has used 500,000 rounds since the start of April, and the former Defense Secretary John Reid said that the operation could be conducted without firing a single bullet. My God. There's madness afoot, Truth Seekers. Here are their names. Evan Bay, Tom Carper, Bob Casey, Kent Conrad, Dianne Feinstein, who not more than 2 years ago said that warrantless wiretapping was an assault on the U.S. Constitution that could not stand. Dianne Feinstein, Daniel Inouye, Amy Klobuchar, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, Claire McCaskill, Barbara Mikulski, Bill Nelson, Ben Nelson, Mark Pryor, Ken Salazar, and Jim Webb? Those are the Democrats who voted for the FISA bill, which Bush signed into law the next day, Sunday, which gives Bush the authority to eavesdrop on U.S. citizens without warrants, which continues what was being done in secret by the NSA in violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978. It's all legal now. Jim Webb, all the women, Dianne Feinstein, Amy Klobuchar, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, Claire McCaskill, Barbara Mikulski. I won't give you the list in the House, the members, Republican or Democrats from the House who voted to end the Fourth Amendment. End it. It's over. It's gone. And who's in charge of the warrantless wiretapping? The Attorney General and the Director of National Intelligence, Mike McConnell and Alberto Gonzalez, they now have the power. Rather than a special court or a judge, they have the power to approve the surveillance. Alberto Gonzalez, and you thought he was going to resign? You thought he was going to be kicked out by the Democrats in the Senate? Now he has the power to wiretap your phone. And it's all legal. It's all legal. Alberto Gonzalez is in charge of it now. And the law that the Democrats caved into, according to congressional aides and other familiar with the details of the law, because we'll probably never see it, said its impact went far beyond what Bush demanded, way beyond. And the new law, for the first time, provides a legal framework to invade your privacy without a warrant that was put together back in 1978 because of all the abuses that the CIA perpetrated against citizens of the United States. It's all gone now. It's gone. Son of a bitch, it's gone. And the Democrats let it happen. The law also gives the Bush crime family power to force telecommunications companies to cooperate with such spying operations. These companies, and you know who they are, these companies can now be compelled to cooperate by orders from the Attorney General. Now, some of these telecommunications company officials had told congressional leaders that they were unhappy with that provision in the bill and might challenge the new law in court. The telecommunications agencies or companies, corporations said, well, we don't like this because it leaves us open to lawsuits. So if you Democrats and you Republicans are going to open the door for warrantless wiretapping, maybe we'll do something about it. The companies told lawmakers that they would rather have a court-approved warrant ordering them to comply than just carte blanche for the Bush crime family to do what they want. And according to James Risen, writing in the New York Times today, he says, in fact, pressure from the telecommunications companies on the Bush administration has apparently played a major hidden role in the political battle over the surveillance issue for the last few months. Not Republicans who believe in freedom and constitutional restrictions, not Democrats, the telecommunications companies. Jesus, God.
And I'm on the street light, a delight, a joy I know. Scared beyond belief, way down in the shadows. And the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face. Common sense is ringing out.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, this is from the AP on Sunday. FBI agents searched the home of former Justice Department lawyer Thomas Tam last week in an effort to determine who leaked details of the warrantless eavesdropping program to the news media. Newsweek magazine reported Sunday, citing two anonymous legal sources. Remember, the story was leaked to the New York Times several months back. This goes on. The agents who have obtained a classified search warrant took Mr. Tam's desktop computer, two laptops belonging to his children, and some of Tam's personal files, said Newsweek, which granted anonymity to the two sources because they did not want to be identified talking about this case. Tam left the department last year. He had worked in the department's Office of Intelligence Policy and Review, a secretive unit that oversees surveillance of terrorist and espionage targets. In December 2005, New York Times published a story exposing the Bush administration's warrantless wiretapping program to eavesdrop on international phone calls and emails of U.S. residents without court warrants. The eavesdropping was conducted without public knowledge and without any court approval until last January, when the program was put under the authority of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Attorney General Gonzalez said the leak, quote, really hurt our country, end quote. So there you have it. It took them a year and a half, but they finally raided the house of former Justice Department Attorney Thomas Tam. The FBI did. Took two laptops belonging to his children and his personal files. And there you go. This is what it's come down to. Not punishment of the Bush crime family for breaking the law, but a raid on the home by the federal police of the man who exposed the crime. This is what we've come to under Bush. Do you understand this? I know you do. I know you do. I'm not going to yell and scream. All right, last email, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. This is from Brenda. Mike, I wish I could hang in there, but I can't seem to stomach what happened on Friday with the Democrats caving in once again on this eavesdropping issue. I was in disbelief yet again when I read the story in the Times earlier today. There is absolutely no hope left in me that the Democrats will do the will of the people and what is clearly right. I know we hear the lip service they provide in stating they're the party who cares about the people and the rule of law. This is clearly a big effing lie. I don't see a difference in either party. I listen to all of the callers on progressive talk shows crying out for the Democrats to put impeachment back on the table. How in the hell can they do that when they can't even tackle a task that is clearly less of a challenge, the eavesdropping program? They have law and truth on their side. They have the numbers in the Senate and the House. They have the American people behind them, but still they caved in. As it stands now, and as I see it, nothing will happen to Gonzalez. Nothing will happen to Bush or Cheney. No one will answer to the crimes of justice that has occurred throughout this administration. And even by a stroke of luck, if a Democrat gets elected, don't count on things changing drastically. They are one and the same, Republicans and Democrats. I can no longer listen to the nightly rants of callers trying to provide solutions to the crisis we're going through and or asking questions on what could be done. My stomach and psyche cannot handle this anymore because nothing will be done. This farce of hearings surrounding Gonzalez is a waste of time. They have enough to impeach him, but won't. I'll retreat now to watching cartoons, as I did after the 2004 election. I will miss your nightly passion, but I cannot take in any of these lies anymore. Maybe sometime in the future I will tune in again. But I will make tonight's broadcast my last until I hear through the grapevine that the Democrats finally decided not to go along with one of the biggest thefts in history. Well, I don't blame you. I really don't. Blame you for Brenda for deciding you've had enough. I can certainly understand that. I certainly understand it. Phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. We're just about out of time for this segment, but let me go to Mary Ann, who is calling from Aurora, Illinois, our bureau chief there. Mary Ann, thanks for holding on.
Oh, hi, Mike. Listen, I totally understand that last writer and some of the emails you got before, because this past weekend I was not attending the Yearly Coast, which I had signed up for as a volunteer, and something 2 weeks ago happened, which made me my stomach churn. I can't even remember it now because I was just so caught off base with this last thing, with the FISA law.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of it being the way Cindy Sheehan had been regarded on the Daily Coast and a lot of the people attitude toward her. And I think, my God, this woman isn't even radical.
Right.
I think the comment that we're just being jerked around by everything. Well, we're being jerked around by the Democrats right now. And it makes me very disappointed. Now, certainly sooner or later, since law is on our side, this will be dealt with. But it's like, the word betrayed kind of gets overused, but that's maybe what we feel.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And these guys, and I can see it, and I feel that the Democrats are so hungry for power. I mean, that's what we're hearing. We can get the House, we can get the Senate and the White House, and then we can start putting things in order. But, you know, when they had power, and they had real power in the Senate, did even as a minority, to block appointments and filibuster.
Sure, sure.
And they kept telling us that they were keeping their powder dry,
yes.
their powder dry for the big one, which would be the big Supreme Court nominee.
Right.
And they caved. So, you know,
if they won't stand up for the Fourth Amendment, to hell with a judge's appointment. If they won't stand up for the Fourth Amendment, what will they stand up for?
Though they won't. I mean, we've done with rule of law, but you do have power.
Do you want to hold on?
Sure.
All right. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back. And when we do come back, we'll be taking phone calls for the rest of the show. So stick around. Stick around, Truth Seeker. We have a few miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy. I am Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Let's go right back to the calls. This is the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Mike Malloy. We're talking with our Aurora, Illinois Bureau Chief at the break there. Mary Ann?
Yes.
Okay. Where were we?
Okay. Where were we? Yeah, I was not attending Yearly Coast. Instead, I was spent a whole rainy afternoon watching episodes of Deadwood. Oh, my God. If you haven't seen it, it's amazing.
Yeah,
I would recommend it to anyone who really wanted to understand, you know, the history of this country, which
right.
isn't even history. I mean, it's still, all of the factors are still very much in operation.
Right.
And, you know, if the Democrats, with all their maneuvering, think that they're, you know, they basically, what they've done is that they've validated this raw power grab. They've validated the kind of raw power that took place in Deadwood.
That's right.
So why would we, then, having done that, go with the weak and the sniveling and the wavering? I mean, if that's the game that's being played in raw power, you know, these are the people that we throw overboard or throw to the pigs because they're dangerous.
That's
you know,
true.
You and I
true.
Could probably survive, in, you know, in a knockout, dragout fight, but not these guys. But anyway, you know, so the Dems, my God. But what I wanted to, what I really called about, I'm sorry, I kind of meandered, but you had John Lash on last Friday. I was so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I had worked with him a little bit. I worked on his campaign, and he's somebody that I keep being impressed with, even though he's very young and he's very inexperienced in politics. Well, now he has a campaign under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in this very weird position of actually knowing quite well a couple of his probable Democratic rivals.
Mm-hmm.
And they're friends of mine. You know, I'm not going to say anything bad about them. They're great people, but they don't get it.
Right.
You know, they still, one of them in particular, is a big booster of the of some of the Blue Dog Democrats, wherever that, whatever you call them, the people who want to appease and think
right.
that this is somehow being reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it could only be because we've been so beaten up that reasonable is, you know, anything that doesn't get us beat up or in their mindset. Whereas someone who, like a Cindy Sheehan, speaks so clearly, you know, this
mm-hmm.
is wrong. We went, I don't care what your machinations are, what your logical constructions are, and your explanations are. I mean, one straight-thinking, straight-speaking person can cut all through that.
That's right.
And, you know, so I'm just, I guess I don't want to give any more of my energy or money to anybody who in the slightest bit buys in to, you know, to the conversation that the Republicans have set.
So you're not going along with the idea any longer, I take it, of voting for Democrats no matter who they are so that the Bush crime family can be stopped. Obviously, that doesn't work.
Well, no. I mean, that was an idea, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
a year ago. I mean, even 2 years ago. But I think that you need to get just better people in politics because, you know, I remember a long time ago, Noam Chomsky describing the Republicans as the A-team and the Democrats as the B-team. And whenever the A-team gets a little out of hand and spooks people by their just raw display of power, they get the B-team in there. That does a few things that, you know, puts people's minds at ease.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think we've just been all caught, you know, all caught up with the money and the power and really trying to do things right and, you know, but we have to hijack the Democratic Party, and really hijack it. I mean, it means if Nancy Pelosi needs to get thrown out, she needs to get thrown out. And I don't care how many nice things she's done about minimum wage and this and that or the other thing. I mean, there's when you have the Constitution being smashed, it's like, you know, attending to some of the sails on your boat when your hull's got a gash in
that's,
it.
Yeah, that,
and
that, that's.
I just can't take these guys' blindness anymore.
Hmm. Huh.
But anyway, and I think there are some, like Mr. Lash, a lot of people actually coming up the ranks, and I will credit old Dr. Dean with that,
mm-hmm.
because he's really poured a lot of money into local.
That's true, and Howard Dean is still getting opposition from people like Rahm Emanuel. People will not understand that Howard Dean's 50-state solution has a chance to still work. It was,
they were downright hostile to it.
Oh, they're
we picked up a few just because, for instance, there was a certain Mr. Foley, you
right.
know, in a heavily Republican area, and simply because he had a Democrat running.
Right.
That gave us an opening. You know,
And of course, that's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And I don't understand what it is that this death wish that the Democratic Party seems to have.
They've bought into it. They don't see it that way. They see it. This is our chance to grab power for another 40 years. I mean, I really think they think that. And quite frankly, power corrupts. And I don't think that Hillary Clinton or Mr. Obama or any of these guys are bad people. But, you know, I don't think they would object too mightily if they had a lot more power than presidents had 20 years ago.
Well, that's, you know,
that's the problem.
Some wag made the statement that they don't, Bush and his gang is not consolidating all this power for President Hillary Clinton. I wonder if in Hillary Clinton's mind, she's not fully aware of if she is elected president, what will be handed to her as a result of this power grab by the executive branch, and how she'll react. How would anybody, if power does corrupt, and absolute power does corrupt absolutely, how is the next president of the United States, be he or she a Democrat, going to respond? What are they going to do?
Well,
undo, let go of all this power that's been collected in the hands of the executive branch?
That's what's so corrosive about this. You know, many leaders in history have started out with, you know, very nice ideals, like Catherine the Great, only to find that the only way they survive is to become the despots they once despised themselves. You know, that it... And if you set up a situation where you have trashed the rule of law, where you've completely dismantled it, you know, you do have order, even if you have no law.
That's
like
true.
Like in Nero's time. You know,
sure.
You do have an order, and it's just the order of the thugs until you fully recover. And it takes a long time to recover. So I don't know what goes through Hillary's mind. I honestly don't. I can't believe she's a bad person, but... You know, I think the power makes you a little goofy. And if you've been in the bubble like she has for, you know, how many years is it since the early 90s, then you just lose perspective. I don't think she's the kind of wise person that can broach that. I mean,
well, let's try to keep fighting. I don't think you and I are ready to watch cartoons yet. Although that doesn't
watch Deadwood. It's much more.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Deadwood. It's time to watch Deadwood. Thanks, Marianne.
Okay.
All right. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Ron is calling from Wellsboro, PA. Ron, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey.
Probably going to piggyback on some of the ideas that your bureau chief was just talking about. I can't talk about any of the candidates on either side of the party as like representing anything that remotely has the will of the people in mind. This debacle, this rape of our Constitution.
Can you believe what happened on Friday? I'm just stunned. I really am.
I've spent all
and
day
I'm not,
on my
and,
blog one. I was just like, I've been writing something. It's just so intense. Because I'm sorry I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, I am not naive. So I didn't go into that Friday vote with my eyes half open. I was hoping against hope that the Democrats would finally make a stand, and then I find out on Saturday, or I guess Saturday when the vote was, whenever it was taken, then Bush signed it into law, and then when I look at how the vote went down and who voted for what and what they gave him, I just about lost it.
Well, I mean, this makes one thing very clear. We know what we have in Washington now.
Well, that's true,
we know what's going on in Washington. And number two, this is the real question I have.
All right,
what happens? Is this law, or is it retroactive? Does it take care of all of the illegal wiretapping he did up to this point? Or is he just a liable for that? I don't know.
You want to hold on?
Yeah, if you.
All right, just stay right there. We'll take a break and come back. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Destabilize the Middle East, enrich the CEO, lie down, people, lay down your Bill of Rights, tell James Madison we had to live.
And we're guarding the civil liberties by monitoring the program on a regular basis, by having the folks at NASA, the legal team, as well as the Inspector General, monitor the program, and we're briefing Congress.
The people at NASA, Jesus God. Past the hour, we're talking with Ron in Wellsboro, PA. Let's go back to that call. All right, Ron, thanks for holding on.
NASA, right?
NASA, yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Sorry. Yeah. I forgot about that one. That one kicks. Oh, jeez. I'm like, that one's kind of blew it for me. I don't know what to say. Like I said, I was going to piggyback on some of the notions of your bureau chief. Like Chomsky also said, there's only one party, the corporate party, you know?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And, I mean, it's just really clear. I guess you can make all these, like, grand pronouncements about what we're going to do as citizens of this country, you know, band together, blah, 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 blah. You know, the conclusion I'm really kind of coming to is to the only thing that really would seem viable in terms of like actually making any kind of political waves with regard to these people, because they obviously don't give a damn about us,
mm-hmm.
is something akin to, like you've mentioned it before, and I'm always keen on it. It's like, you know, something like a general strike.
Yeah, just people stopping.
Just stop. Or you know what? It's just assume you have no rights of privacy. But do it like the old hippies do. Let it hang out. You know what I mean? Just give them everything.
You know, there's another way to handle all this, and I've touched on it before several months back or a year. I don't know. I mentioned the fact that when you consider all the isms out there, other than the democratic ideals, when you consider fascism and communism and totalitarianism and corporatism, yada yada yada, that unless you're a targeted group. Fascism is not all that difficult to live under if you're willing to play by the rules that are put out there by the ruling class. Now, keeping that in mind, I think the primary engine that drives evolution is adaptation. It's an organism being able to adapt and then evolving to a change in its environment. If that's the case, then there's a question in this. Do you think that maybe an answer for people like you, like Marianne, like so many of us that are going nuts with this, that maybe it's time to just adapt and to say there was an experiment in this country. There was an experiment in several countries, but especially in this country. It ran its course. There is a new world order, all lowercase letters there. I'm not parroting Bush. There is a new world order now. That says it's going to be not quite as bad as the old lord and serf idea. People can still get educated. People can still have jobs. People can still take a vacation when they want to. But there's a new world order that says these quaint ideas as ensconced in the first 10 amendments to our Constitution are just that, quaint ideas. They don't apply any longer. And we get right down to it. Maybe someone can make the question, how could they apply? In a global society, how do you guarantee Fourth Amendment rights, for example, in a global society? I mean, how do you do it? So, is there a chance? Got awfully silent with Ron. Is there a chance that the answer, and if it is, I don't know, I may suck the gas pipe, but is the answer the possibility that adaptation is the next step for people who still are raging against the machine? Maybe it's time to just say, well, you know, I want to survive. And part of evolution, if not the key part of evolution, is adaptation, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there are several issues I have with that. First of all, I don't know, whatever the $38 billion that KBR got to, refurbish all the FEMA camps around the country. That's always kind of like made me a little nervous.
Right.
But this is just the basic principle for that makes the argument somewhat tenuous for me, and I understand your point pretty well, I believe. It's that human life is involved here. What we acquiesce in with regard to like how our military operates around the world and how we are so easy, how so easily we discount the lives of people, say, if they have like brown skin.
Right.
Right. And they live in countries with names that, you know, we only like, I can't remember what the statistic is that so many people don't even know where, you know, Iraq is on a map.
Right.
When we discount the lives of children, and women and innocent men who are just trying to get along with their lives. This is the thing that I always remember from like the Reagan era. It's like, okay, we're allowing the Contras to go down there and just murder nuns and disappear people. And, our School of America's folks are going down there and training these people to just kind of disappear these folks. And I've always had this question. When does it come up over the border?
Mm-hmm.
When does this kind of behavior come up over the border? When does it start happening here? I mean, you know, I think you mentioned it the other day. I'm not certain, but, you know, something to the fact that there are like 800 SWAT team operations in the United States like every day or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I've read, and it's all practice. And when you take a look at these people on television, they're looking scarier, scarier. Hey, listen, Ron, I have to leave it there.
Yeah, I got it, man. Okay.
All right.
Take care, Mike.
Appreciate you checking in. We'll talk again. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
We watched tragedy unfold, did as we were told, on the soul. That was the greatest show of our life, but that's over.
Border to border and
coat. Well, it means something. Border to border and coat. Coat. Cat Mary sends an email. Mike, a contributor to one of the indie media sites, has called for a peaceful general strike on September 11th. I'll be participating. The only thing I'd amend would be to extend the strike to cover 3 days and repeat periodically if needed. I'd also suggest wearing an orange T-shirt that says enough. And going off the grid entirely, consuming only what you've stored and not using any utilities or transportation except foot or bicycle. This seems the only thing left that will evoke a change. All other peaceful means have been ignored, ridiculed, or desecrated. It's worth repeating again what Saul Alinsky said, quote, once you accept your own death, all of a sudden you're free to live. You no longer care about your reputation. You no longer care except so far as your life can be used tactically to promote a cause you believe in, end quote. Keep it lit, Captain Mary. And Drew in Houston writes, the Democrats, as one of your callers said earlier, are desperate to return to executive power, but they're overlooking the obvious. Though. Bush is putting infrastructure in place, such as judges in the wiretap bill passage. It looks as though he plans on not leaving in 18 months. Do Democrats really think he will leave this all for them? He either already has the next election fixed, or he is sure of an incident that will let him initiate martial law. I can't think of any other reason, Drew in Houston. Well, the other reason could be what we've all toyed with, several people, as disparate as George Wallace and Ralph Nader, have said all along. There's not a dime's worth of difference between either party. If that's the case, if both parties are in fact controlled by corporate America or corporatism or whatever you want to call it, then Bush or Cheney, the rest of these people, are only acting as instruments of this corporate power, and the next president, be he or she Democrat or Republican, will continue to do the same. I don't know anymore. I don't know that I ever knew. A lot of people will put out the idea that they know the answers. Maybe you tell your friends, well, here's the answer. I know a lot of talk show hosts do that. I have no idea. I have no idea whatsoever what the ultimate grand scheme or plan is, or even if there is one. But for the people who say that Bush would not be putting into place all these levers of power, which reduce the legislative to nothing. This is becoming like the Duma in the old Soviet Union. It was nothing but a rubber stamp for what the Politburo came up with, what the ruling clique in the Kremlin. They'd decide policy. It would be presented to the Duma or the Parliament. They would give their approval. Whenever the people would vote, there would be one candidate, and you'd go out and vote, and, you know, the Soviet ruler would get 97.6% of the vote. This is exactly what appears that Bush is doing. But he's an instrument of this, I would think. I don't think Bush has the desire to be dictator. I think Cheney does. I think there are a number of people in the Bush crime family who would like to rise or sink to that level of power. But Bush is a jackass. Bush is a moron. I mean, he wants to sit around and you know, play grab ass and drink beer. He's not, in my opinion, he's not the totalitarian type. He does what he's told. And I'm not trying to let him off the hook for any criminal activities that he has been a co-conspirator in. No, not at all. But he's not the initiator of this stuff. You know that as well as I do. He's a dumbass. He literally is just a dumb, stupid man. So if we have, in fact, and I don't see any reason why we haven't, we can go back to the Reagan administration when the corporate lobbyists began writing the legislation. They would go into the committees, committee hearing rooms, and write the legislation that then became law for the rest of us to obey. That was 25 years ago. So if it's come to fruition now, from Reagan and Pappy Bush and Clinton and now a Junior Bush, what difference does it make who's the next president? Really, what difference does it make? And this is something that, as I mentioned, people as opposite or certainly not on the same wavelength as George Wallace back in the late 60s, early 70s, and Ralph Nader for all of his career have been saying that corporate America now controls the game. And if that's the case, what are you going to do about it? You know, what are any of us going to do about it? Maybe it is time to consider the idea of adaptation. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that. I'm damn sure not going to do that. I'm not going to adapt to this nonsense, this insanity, this craziness, except to the extent that I already have. I've said many times on this program, I must not take this seriously because here I sit, day after day after day. Oh, well, Mike, but you have a radio program. Now, that's hog snot. That's no more important than somebody who works on an assembly line someplace or somebody who's working in an emergency room. If we all know what's going on, let me rephrase that. Those of us who know what's going on, and that's a huge chunk of the American population, and if we just continue to do what we're doing and bemoan it all and say, well, damn, you know, we have to get progressive Democrats, and you and I are not taking it to the next level. I don't know. Are we complicit in all this? I have no idea. Back to your phone calls. Jeff is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Been holding on forever. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Mike? Yeah, I just want to know, how is it possible that a lame duck president with a 25% approval rating can accomplish anything?
Only with the complicity of the party that's supposed to be providing some sort of a check or a balance, I would imagine.
I mean, and then my second point is, are Pelosi and Reid even capable of stating this far and no further? I mean, do they even have that kind of fortitude to say, you know, we're not going beyond this point? And then, of course, when the administration goes beyond that point, actually do something?
Well, they haven't done it yet, have they?
not that I'm aware of. I mean, all I hear is, you know, capitulation after capitulation.
It's pretty shocking.
I mean, we're, you know, 7 months into this new administration, and they've capitulated twice on major issues. I mean, I'm like wondering at what point, you know, is there going to be a change of direction?
Well, I keep wondering that, and I think a lot of people do, and I've said on this program, maybe Nancy Pelosi is a hell of a lot smarter than you and me. Maybe there is some sort of a master plan afoot here that you and I, just because we're so pissed off, we can't really see what it is. You suppose that could be the case, that there is something going on that you and I are just not aware of, and that eventually this will all come clear, and we'll step out of the matrix, and we'll all be able to say, oh, okay, yay, they had a plan all along, I just didn't see it. Do you think that could be the possibility here?
Well, if it is, I mean, I think there needs to be some sort of discreet word to the faithful. I mean, they need to let people know that there, if there is a plan, you know, that it is, you know, coming. I mean, that they actually
you'd
have a plan.
You'd think, wouldn't you? I mean, just to, you know, toss us a bone to let us know, no, we Democratic leaders in Congress are really not going to betray every democratic principle that's evolved over the past 200 years, we are going to pull this out. You'd think that they would give us a hint, right?
I would. I'm still waiting for one. I haven't heard it yet.
I haven't either. All right. Well, listen, Jeff, thanks.
All right.
I hear what you're saying. I appreciate you checking in. Preston is calling from Denver, listening on the Internet. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks.
Hi. Sure.
I like your idea of stepping out of the matrix, at least the military corporate matrix.
Yeah.
And I see something of a progressive matrix developing, a positive one. I just went to a sustainable living fair last weekend here in Denver. And for me, that represented some of the answers to what can we do. I don't have a lot of faith in the federal government politicians, although some of them do some good things. They have their moments. But I put more emotional and energy into what's going on at the grassroots and what's going on among socially responsible entrepreneurs and state and local level politicians, I think, are doing some very good work. At this sustainable living fair, there was a woman named Frances Moore LePay who became famous for a book she wrote called Diet for a Small Planet, sold millions of copies all over the world.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and she's still at it, still doing great work. And
hey, hold on just a second, Preston, will you?
Okay.
I'll come back after the break. We have to pause here for some commercial announcements. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm happy like the old pill used to do.
Ten before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program at KPHX in Phoenix, our flagship station. He also answered your calls. Billy Foster, Nova M Radio CIO and chat room moderator. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bays, the executive producer. I'll be here tomorrow night. Then Peter Werby will finish the week, and Sam Cedar will sit in for me next Sunday. But I'll be here tomorrow night, and you should be too. Back to who are we talking to? Preston, in who called in from Denver, listening on the internet. All right, Preston, you wanted to mention Hiroshima and Tom Tancredo.
Yes, I did. And real quickly on Frances Moore LePay, she was talking about where is our power and where we can find that in different organizations here and abroad.
Uh-huh.
She writes a lot for Yes Magazine and yesmagazine.org, I think, if people are looking for more ideas on what we can do.
Okay.
And real quickly on Hiroshima, I wanted to mention that, you know, automatically when that comes up, we've had drilled in our heads that that was done to save lives.
Right, which it wasn't.
It was not. Right. You know, people should check out books like The Decision to Use the Atomic Bomb by Gar Alperovitz. He has a quote from General LeMay who said, "The war would have been over in 2 weeks without the Russians entering and without the atomic bomb. The atomic bomb had nothing to do with the end of the war at all."
Right.
And
Curtis LeMay was a warmonger of the highest order. So when it comes from a thug like him, it has more credence than it had it come from someone like Douglas MacArthur.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, this kind of connects with Tom Tancredo. People were wondering, how does this figure exist here in Colorado, which is a place with many progressive things going on? We're kind of turning blue. We have a very progressive governor now.
Mm-hmm.
But he got elected. He comes from the 6th District.
Is that Colorado Springs?
No, actually, it's more like southern part of Denver. But it was featured in the Michael Moore movie, Bowling for Columbine.
Uh-huh.
It's where Columbine High School is located.
Okay.
And it's also, as Michael Moore pointed out in the film, it's where a big Lockheed Martin plant is located.
Okay.
Okay, and now that's where Tancredo's rhetoric and bigotry and the dehumanization of people comes in. He is serving the interests of Lockheed Martin, who need these justifications for these multi-billion-dollar weapons of mass destruction they're making.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to demonize immigrants, you know, the economic refugees of Hurricane NAFTA. He needs to demonize them because Lockheed Martin stands to make a ton of money off of building that high-tech wall along the southern border with the drones and the radars and surveillance, Lockheed, Raytheon, they're all going to make a fortune.
Tancredo is really an evil bastard, isn't he? I mean, he just is.
He's pathetic. And it was interesting, he had a person ran against him, a Democrat, who was actually in the military. Tancredo runs around a lot with little, you know, Air Force hats on and jackets and poses a lot as a big military guy. But when it came his time to serve in Vietnam, his excuse was he had psychiatric problems. Seriously.
Oh, my God.
So an actual veteran went against him in the last election. He really didn't have a chance to win because so many people live off of that, you know, that corporate welfare that Lockheed gets.
Uh-huh.
And so they're invested in that system, and they, I guess, choose to be deceived by people like Tancredo. But the person who went against him, Bill Winter, he gave it a great run. And he put a lot more pressure on Tancredo than he was expecting. And, you know, his effort, I think, is a lesson to a lot of us. We may not achieve particular goals, but there are things we can do and things we can learn in the process of resistance that can be very rewarding and be educational experiences. And, you know, you never know what hopeful things may come out of it in the future. And one last comment, the earlier caller was talking about the School of the Americas and people being disappeared and things like that. In the most recent issue of Yes Magazine, it's all about Latin American movements going on. Places like Venezuela and Ecuador pulling out of their agreements with the School of the Americas. The president of Ecuador is refusing a U.S. military base being put in Ecuador. In fact, he said, "You guys can put a military base in Ecuador when we can put a military base in Miami." Okay? So hopefully their democracy is going to make its way across our border.
Well, either that or our military is going to make its way across their border. You know, North Americans have had little patience with socially progressive moves south of the border, whether they're political or whatever they are.
True.
Historically, anytime just take a look at Venezuela. Anytime, or take a look at Salvador Allende. Anytime there's an effort made to democratize a Latin American country, usually there's a Henry Kissinger who will step in and order the murder of somebody, and reward the killers with a decades long dictatorship. So I just hope it's different this time.
Yeah, they tried the coup against Hugo in 2002. And the people rose up and overturned that coup. I mean, that was pretty amazing. And I think it's great that Sean Penn is going down there and giving him some publicity. And it's about so much more than Hugo Chavez. It's about the people and the literacy campaigns they're developing and the Cuban doctors who are going there to help out and a number of things, the things they're trying to do to create a real popular media. Again, it's a huge struggle against impossible odds, but they're still at it.
You know, I hope people in these parts of the world, like Latin America or the Middle East or Southeast Asia, I hope they understand that not all Americans, although I can see where they get this impression, not all Americans are imperialist and incipient fascists. I can see where they get that impression because of the policies that we allow domestically and foreign. But I hope they understand that there are people in this country like you, millions of people, who are saying no to this. Hey, listen, I have to leave it there. Preston,
great,
thank you.
Great speaking with you.
Appreciate you checking in, pal. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Take care. We didn't get to you tonight, True Seeker. I apologize. We'll see you tomorrow night, though, okay? Thanks for participating in the program tonight, however you did that. I appreciate your calls, too. Take care, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.